Hello, everyone. This is David Pensick, Communications Manager for SCLO Center Region Library. And this is a bonus edition of the SCLO Library podcast. This is coming out on Friday, June 19th, 2020. Today is Juneteenth Day. It's the holiday that commemorates and celebrates the end of slavery after following the Civil War here in the United States. And a lot more people are thinking about that day, and more states are making it a state holiday following what the death of George Floyd and what's happened in towns and cities across this country since then, including here in State College in the Center Region, where we've seen people come to downtown State College almost every week to come together. And we've seen more conversations happening when it comes to racism. And so we thought it'd be a good chance to talk with two people who really, in our community, who really foster and bring about and inspire conversations on tough topics, and have been doing so not just in this moment, but have been doing so throughout their careers here in State College. So I'm joined by Leslie Lang. She's a student advocacy specialist and director of adult learner programs at Penn State. And she's very active in the community. She's the past president of the Forum on Black Affairs. She's a founding member of the Racial Unity Network. She has a daughter who is in high school, and so Leslie is very active in the State College Area School District. And Jason Brown, a lot of people know Jason from the radio. He's a DJ on B94.5. He co-hosts the Morning Getaway Show, but he's also a past president of the local Rotary Club. He's an improv actor. He does a lot of work with Happy Valley Improv. He's worked in the Big Brothers Big Sisters, and he's coached youth leagues. And in the past few weeks on his radio show, he and his co-host Angela have done Facebook Live conversations in the middle of their show where people in the community, or I guess or whoever wants to log around the world maybe even, can talk about their thoughts and feelings about what's been going on. He also hosted a conversation, a Facebook Live conversation from Three Dots downtown. So hope you enjoy my conversation with Leslie and Jason as we talk about having conversations in our community on racism and talk about difficult topics, not just now, but into the future. I guess I want to first talk about conversations. Obviously, a lot of people are having conversations on the topic of racism and race and these difficult talks. And both of you have been part of those even before the last few weeks, and just want to see what you're hearing from the community, especially if I don't know if you've heard the talks you've had or the things that people are telling you, anything that's inspired you or presented any hopes. And maybe Jason, I'll lead with you because I know you've done stuff with your radio show and with Three Dots. What are some of the things that you're hearing from the community?
I am in a role where I am on the radio. And I'm in positions that have a lot of potential influence. And so I've tried to figure out a way to make sure that I try to figure out a way to be a voice in the community, but also someone who listens. And so what we've done with Three Dots and also the radio station is that we wanted to provide a space for people to be able to have a conversation, to be able to open up, to be able to talk, to be able to chat. One of the things that I learned through my facilitations and my experiences in my jobs and even outside of those two areas, radio and Three Dots, is that conversation and being open and being receptive and listening matters. So I've tried to create a space online. We went live on the radio all week last week. In the morning, during the morning show, Angela and I during the morning show, and just had a conversation with people. We asked people for their input, how they were feeling, their perspectives, and we had a diverse set of people respond. Some days there were a lot of people responding, some days there weren't. On top of that, when we did the Three Dots event this week, unfortunately, it overlapped with another event that was doing something very similar. But it was an idea of bringing multiple people together that were in the community to just listen and to be not only be a voice, but be ears so that people felt like they were being heard, so that the conversation can continue. if people don't feel like people are listening, then I feel like people stop talking. And if people stop talking, that's when the conversation ends. And that's what we don't want to have occur. So that's, so those are two areas in which, through Three Dots and also the radio station, in which we hosted an event where people could just share. And they both were as good as they needed to be for the people that were there.
I think that's really important, Jason. And I agree with you. We just have to keep conversation flowing through our community. And so there are multiple swirling conversations. So I can't speak for everyone, but I think we have been organizing our agency and coming together as a community. And that has been evident in the latest protests. And they have been high school students and parents and faculty and staff and community members. And I think we have had three really wonderful protests recently that have brought people together despite the pandemic. They came out social distancing with their masks, but not really standing apart from one another properly. But I think they all would agree that it was a worthy endeavor to stand in solidarity in order to bring about change in our community.
Yeah, I was wondering about the outside of the protests, the conversations. A lot of them have to happen online because of the other big thing, which is the COVID-19. And I'm wondering, has that been, do you feel that, I don't know, is that a good or positive thing? Not the virus, but just the conversations can happen online because maybe someone wouldn't physically go to an event, like say at Three Dots downtown, they wouldn't physically go there to hear, but they, if they can just turn on their computer and be part of something, they can. I don't know if you think it's made a difference at all, the fact that these conversations...
I do think it's made a difference. I think we all have actually been forced online through all these Google Hangouts or Zoom meetings, public forums, all of the Facebook Live. It has united the Christian background and others who find themselves having to worship online or gather online, and they are more intentional about gathering online and praying together, even in this pandemic, even about the national issues about race. And so pockets of people who typically would not have come out to speak about these issues are speaking about these issues online together in these forums. And so I think it's very valuable in hashing out our demands, in talking about reform, and getting these discussions into the heart of the matter, which is in your home, to talk about what you believe and what your values are and how you relate that to your children and your family. So I think it's making a difference.
I also think that, and there's no study that says this, but I also think that because we've been so socially distant for so many weeks, and the first opportunity to come together is in to support a cause as worthy as social justice, is one of those things that COVID amplified the need for people to come together, and people were looking for a reason to come together. And that's why I believe partially why there's a lot of energy right now, more so than I thought there would be, is because we have, first time I see another human being is with a mask on and Black Lives Matter because someone got shot. That's heavy. That's a lot. But that's something that we also connect very closely to when we have not been able to for a while. And so what I think still COVID did or has done or and is still doing is allowing us to not distract ourselves, allowing for a lot of the public to remove the distractions, to be able to focus on a just cause and just causes and understand and begin the conversations about white supremacy, about civil rights here, in civil rights, the justice system, all of these big topics that we have not faced, we are now facing because, quite frankly, people don't have much else to focus on. But I am happy that that's the case because now we're focusing on
it. Leslie, you mentioned the home and you're a parent, you have a high school, and obviously not one size fits all, but I mean, what are some of
you know, for parents who are looking to, you know, we hear a lot at the library. Sesame Street just did something this past weekend on CNN because parents are looking to have conversations with their kids. I don't know how, if you want to talk about either from your experience with your daughter or just in general, you know, what some good advice might be.
Absolutely. I think that is critical at this point in our history. I think it is so imperative because our children learn by doing and seeing and their environment first before any formal classroom education. They learn from what's absent from their households, who's not in their schools, who's teaching them, who's speaking to them. They know what's missing. And whatever's missing lacks value, and they draw conclusions about that. So you can encourage cultural competence with even your children and yourself by inviting diverse people to your home. I mean, not in the middle of a pandemic, but I mean, right now, in general, you ask your children, they will tell you. I always think there's three critical questions to think about. Ask them who's in your circle at school. Doesn't matter what age they are. They'll tell you. And then ask them, what have you observed at school? And they will come up with a slew of issues. And then finally, ask them, what do you think we can do about that? And your kids will keep talking to you because they know. And even if they didn't speak up, they know what should be done or they have a recommendation. And that's a parent's opportunity to talk and to teach them that language matters, context matters. I think we tend to turn a blind eye sometimes to our children when they come home with all these things, calling one another names and the mean girls in middle school and all the drama with the boys and all these things. But if we would stop turning a blind eye and ask them, how are you communicating with your friends? It wasn't okay to call them those names, even in jest. That's not respectful. And we don't remind them of that. So when they see something that they don't like, they are more apt to use it as a weapon towards strangers. Right? And so we want to disrupt that because language does matter and they can use their agency even as children. And if you give them the opportunity to first love them and listen to them and talk to them, they will share with you and they will confide in you. And then you can ask them, what do you think we do about this? And then they'll stimulate their own little brains into thinking critically about what they can contribute to the world around them. No matter what age, at 2 when they're fighting over a toy, when 5 when they're in kindergarten learning, you know, to pledge allegiance to a flag that they haven't even known yet. And these are important and critical pieces that they have even before kindergarten. And statistics show that children learn about race at the age of 3. And so I think it's really important that we take active roles in being there for our children and encouraging them and empowering them to make a difference in who they develop to be.
And one of the things that we talked about in one of our discussions earlier this week was the importance of education. So as a parent, you teach yourself how to do all the things that you need to do as a parent. How do I make sure I change the diaper correctly? How do I do anything? How do I make sure my kid during adolescence is, you know, I coach them through that process correctly? We read books, we educate ourselves, we Google those things. But one of the things that we don't always do as parents and as leaders of youth groups or big brothers, big sisters, is take the time out to educate ourselves to be able to be more effective in the area of race. And I believe that, yes, it is, and yes, conversations are important. Just starting the conversation is brilliant and important itself. But it is also, I think, important for those folks who are in the position of teaching and working with youth to educate themselves and to have that conversation with themselves internally. We hop a lot of to external first. Reflect for a moment. Be like, okay, how do I feel about this? What are some moments that I've had to deal with? And how do I talk about that when they do present it to me? Somebody did use the N-word. Somebody did use this one phrase that wasn't directly insulting, but it was kind of, they felt uncomfortable and they seemed uncomfortable, Dad. What do I do? Well, those are the moments in which not only are educational moments where education would be, self-education would be productive, but also self-reflection would be highly important. But yes, working with youth from the inside the house to camps to playgrounds to, well, no matter where they are, is to be receptive to that environment and be responsive as an adult or as a high school student or as a peer, as a kid. That is what we need to have happen. And it does not need to only be at school in one class for 5 minutes. It needs to be something that we think about all the time, because a lot of us think about that all the time.
Absolutely. And mirror what we do with our children, with others. I think how to start the discussion is what I hear in the community all the time. I'm not sure how to start that discussion. Well, guess what? Rip out a headline, choose any one of them. And then that will lead to the reflection that you're talking about, Jason, right? Discuss what you believe with other family members or a friend. It can be one other person. Because the truth is, you don't know what you believe until it's tested. And you won't have that with a self-discussion. You need somebody else to check you and hold you accountable for what you're expressing. And sometimes it's just a tweak. If someone doesn't hear what you're thinking, you don't express it, right? How many times do we yell at people in our heads and they never hear it come out of our mouth? But it doesn't mean I'm not speaking well of you or thinking kindly of you is what I say. But you haven't heard the dialogue in my head. And that's problematic. So if we share it, how you're feeling, it will be expressed. And then you will understand, where did that come from? Oh, that was my great aunt's belief about that. I didn't know how to fear Black people, but she told me I couldn't bring friends home. You know, and you don't even know where that came from because you have that one Black friend. Well, guess what? Have the dialogue with the one Black friend, or have it with your aunt. That would even be better. Say, you may have had some experience that led you to be afraid of this person, but it doesn't allow you to maintain that decade-long fear and pass it on from generation to generation. So I say, start the discussion, rip out a headline, and discuss it with someone else, and you will uncover what you believe about a certain circumstance. Agreed. And then you relate it to yourself locally. Say, does that reflect my community? Like, is that happening where I live? And then look nationally, and then look globally. And I think that the light bulb and the aha moment will come in.
Yeah, Jason, I was going to, because you've been a mentor, you know, whether as a coach or big brother, big sisters, and you know, things, parents, and you have the schools. But outside that, I mean, as that saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child. What are some things that maybe in your experiences as a coach, mentor, that you thought could be of help for other people who are in that position?
My first response, there's a couple things you can do. First, again, educate yourself. If you're in charge of a group, and that group, expect that group to be diverse and be able to begin to learn about the groups that you're going to be serving. To educate yourself. I had a couple friends of mine who have mentioned to me in the past week that, more than a couple, there's been like about five of them that said, I have actively gone out and purchased books about anti-racism and learning about, I plan to watch these movies, I plan to do these things because I want to educate myself. If you are in charge of a group, it's your responsibility to educate yourself and be aware.
Yes.
The second thing I would say is to not turn a blind eye to uncomfortable situations. If you are taking a role as a leader and as someone who is helping youth, when someone does something, whether that's blatant or you have the hunch that it's not appropriate, or there is this underlying bias that is happening, microaggression that is occurring, then it is your responsibility as a leader to address that.
And in time, and I say that, I interrupt to say, on the spot, you can easily say, yes, I disagree with that behavior, or I disagree with that comment. Let's talk about that later.
Yep.
But at least you haven't scolded the person, you didn't shame the person, but you stood up about what you disagreed with. So yes, Jason, I agree.
I was done, Leslie. So it was a perfect transition for you to take over at that particular time. So you got it.
Well, you know, I got something, because I like to think that everybody has the ammunition they need. So if you're a coach and you're out there with your sports and your guys and your girls and you're on a team, take the time to recommend a diverse movie about your sport and talk about how they became a team. And if you can't find anything, you can always go back to Penn State History of We Are and look it up. But there's lots of things. I mean, you could do it for football, hockey, any sport, tennis, rugby, whatever you'd like to look at. And have a movie night when you do team building. Build with your teams. Have them watch something diverse and talk about it. And you don't need a whole lot, and you don't need to be an expert. Just those three questions. How do you reflect on this moment? Does it connect to what I'm watching? Do I see this at school or in my local neighborhood? And the kids will take the discussion. And all you need to do is listen, like Jason said. The most reaffirming thing is to listen. And if you hear expression of conversation that is biased, then you can interrupt it. And you just simply say, you know, that's not the correct term, or that's not the way we could, how else could we describe that? Or who else has experienced that? Redirect it. And then you can always come back at a later date to the specific student on the side and send them a note and say, you know what, I saw this resource, you might enjoy reading it. Or your comment made me want to talk to you more about this issue. I suggest we do this. If that's not your avenue or you don't feel like you can do that, okay. But that's for the sporting crew with anybody who's mentoring some kids. Anybody else who doesn't connect, that's individual, I love the idea. And Jason brought it up. So many friends have asked us for recommendations on books. Now, you know, everybody's got a best look. Go look up Oprah. She's got 25 of this list and 10 of this list, whatever you want to read. And I'm sure SCLO has a long list of what you'd like to read as well. And even Barnes & Noble and Amazon, if you type in one word, they will suggest 21 books. And I want to do a shout out really quickly, because I was impressed when I went out to Barnes & Noble and they told me they were having a run on books. Like, the number of people that came in when we opened right after we turned green, everybody came in and was buying diverse books. And there you go. So have a book discussion even with your church. Or just your family. Say, we're going to read this together, and pass the book around to the kids. Let them read a couple words, a chapter. Read it out loud like story time and talk about it. Just discuss it with friends over Zoom. And then just ask, what about that struck your heart? Or did you make you angry? And then I just ask you to take that and become a 10-minute activist or advocate. Identify what it is that you liked or disliked about it. Ask yourself if you're ready to act on it. Find one local group or a friend who knows something about it. And then either attend a meeting, make a phone call, or write an email. Or if those of you out there are blogging, write something about it and post it. But begin to speak out, because we don't know what you're thinking, and your silence is really painful.
You know, just a little plug, the organizations that the library works with, they have made it really easy now with either the e-books or e-audiobooks. They put together catalogs so you can type in anything and you'll get a slew of titles on topics of race and racism. So it's really,
it is. And yeah. I'll give a shout out to SCLO, who was doing it long before. They used to have a book read, and they would even invite the authors to come and hold discussions in the community room. So way to go, SCLO. I hope they can pick it up and do it again. It was really entertaining. They used to even do it over the lunch hour sometimes. So it was very powerful, and they've been doing it long before anybody else jumped on board. So way to go, SCLO.
That's great. I guess, look, whether it's online or when we can eventually gather in places, where would you like to see the conversations, or how do you think conversations can continue? How do you think this can continue to move forward as we want people to continue to have these talks and people listening, and what would you like to see?
I think Jason mentioned he held a virtual conversation on race, just an open discussion, and he broadcasted it via Facebook Live, which was great. We are typically encouraging even the high school students to do that themselves. They have the means now, and it's free to them in a Google Hangout. Start your own conversation. And like I said, If they would continue it and they need material, they can use a headline or a book or a song or a podcast. They can use anything to have a discussion. And those discussions should stay in motion. Our church started a racial unity network between Calvary and Unity churches, and they're amazing. We did 3 book reads with people from both congregations, a mixed congregation, and it actually is what prompted us to start the network. So we've continued those discussions. So I encourage people to get people in whatever circle, whatever network you're in, to do it and do it together. You don't have to join anything. Just wherever you are already, keep the conversation open and flowing.
I agree with all of what Leslie just said. I am honestly a little more pessimistic about the consistency of energy over time.
Yes.
I'm not a historian, but from my experience, this level of energy will eventually begin to die out unless something unfortunate happens sooner than later. But my desire is for us to be able to use this energy now to make enough changes in critical places that they are integrated into our systems in a way that even when it dies out, these implemented ideas persist. So I'm talking about getting school districts to implement programs starting at a very young age that talks about race, that goes to working with adults at Penn State to not just have a course that's like, oh, somebody said something bad at work. Okay, now we're going to go into a session for a day and talk about it, then leave it alone. What if there's something more on a day-to-day basis that Penn State can even implement from a staff or a faculty perspective that integrates race into its program? So that when this energy does begin to subside, that we have made a step forward and we've made progress to be able to educate, have more conversations, be more open, be receptive, to provide more books and more resources to the people that need it, who create opportunities for people to really make change. And whether that's one kid who now understands the level of where they are and who they are and what race means, to something larger than that of seeing a whole entire school district, multiple school districts, an entire community, to be able to say, I get it, and I need to continue this on a day-to-day basis. But to just have those conversations now and only think that that is all we need, I think is not enough.
We need changes.
And then we will see some great change for the next X number of years into the future.
And I would say I agree with the fact that we need to take both our advocacy and our education and make it activism. And what I want to just backpedal, because you mentioned the university and you mentioned the school district. And so the school district has been making really great strides this year. They have a new director of inclusivity and equity, and she's doing a dynamic job. And she has used opportunities to motivate and implement programs that require parents, community members, teachers, administrators, and students, along with developing, this is our second cohort of peer advocates to talk about social justice issues in the school. We are also in the progress of reforming the history curriculum, but you know that's going to take a lot more effort and elbow room outside of the actual educational system to get that proponent changed so that we can do it. But those elements do exist K through 12. And they do exist in college. Now, here's the rub. All of those things, when you pay for an education, these courses are offered. extracurricular activities are offered. Education abroad are offered. We have social justice circles and discussions and keynotes and volunteer and all these things that are out there, but you can't make 60,000 students enroll themselves for social justice issues and change. And that's why the conversations need to continue at home so they can address where their beliefs and their values are so that they can actually engage in their lives to make the difference.
Well, with Leslie and Jason, you two are people who have been inspired by you and you've helped foster these conversations. And I think, things are happening now, but as you said, I think with it can continue forward into the future. And I just want to say thank you for the work you two are doing in helping foster these conversations, having people be able to talk and hopefully continue to do so even after, as JC said, maybe some of the passion dies down a bit, that these conversations have to continue on. So I want to thank you for joining us and for the work that you're doing. I appreciate it so much.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Leslie. It's always a pleasure to work with you, Leslie. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
I want to thank Leslie and Jason again for not only for joining us for this episode, but for their work in fostering and hosting and creating spaces for these conversations to take place, especially during this time when it is difficult for people to come together. We've been creative in online with having ways for people to come together and have these talks. So I want to thank them again and thank everyone who is doing that. It's great work that you are doing. Hope everyone has a great weekend, and until next time, take care, everyone.